Welcome to another episode of the David Mead Podcast. On today's episode, I have a special guest with me, Dr. David Lakisa. Dave, you've completed your PhD on Pacific Sport and Management Diversity at the University of Technology Sydney Business School. You completed a Master's in International Sport Management at Southern Cross Uni and a Bachelor of Education at Queensland University of Technology. So you've done a bit of homework over the years. Welcome to the podcast, mate. Over the past two decades, you've been doing a lot of work bringing awareness to rugby league, sport, and in the workplace for Pacific Islanders. What's the drive behind this type of work?
Well, first, malo lava soi fu maua, manlangi mama. It's meaning in Samoa and a formal greeting. It's a blessing to be here indeed. And David, congratulations on the work, on all the work that you've accomplished thus far. And in terms of your question, what does that mean, or what's the drive? Well, academia is one thing, right? But evidence-based learning is another. And, so you only have to turn on the TV in any rugby football code in Australia, and now even globally, to notice the presence of Pacifica prowess or athleticism, if you will. But behind that, I wanted to, I guess, storify or talk story, or in Pan-Pacific terms, te talanoa, and to exchange ideas, skills, and experiences about what the Pacifica athlete experiences, what that looks like, not just from an Australian, New Zealand standpoint, but globally. And that sort of initiated the journey of unpacking those experiences, if you will. So the journey's been a long one, but it's certainly been a worthwhile one.
And before we talk about some more of your experience with rugby league, where did you grow up and where were you born?
Well, mum's from Whaalunga, Savai in Samoa. Dad's from Kulaele, Upolu in Samoa. And like many Pacific people, they migrated to New Zealand in the late 60s, early 70s. So I was born in New Zealand, but as a seven-year-old, we moved to Australia in the 80s. So Australia's home. I grew up here in Brizzy, and became a PE teacher out at St. Peter Claver College. So I just did my studies here at QUT, and then ventured down to Sydney for love, if you will. I chased a beautiful, lady, and she became my wife. And so we spent 15 years in Sydney. I was teaching PE and got a foot in the door, and then offered a job at the New South Wales Rugby League as Australia's first in an inaugural role in what was called the Pacific Islander Coaching and Development Officer for New South Wales Rugby League. That was a journey. I absolutely loved my time there.
Yeah, what year was that?
That was 2007.
Yep.
And I guess just prior to that, the game noticed a changing face, if you will, this changing demographic, right through from junior reps, especially at schoolboy, Australian schoolboy level, and even at the game at the NRL level, when there was sitting around your 30%, and now it sits today at an astonishing 48% from our last count from NRL Wellbeing Education. Mm-hmm. That's a staggering, a significant proportion.
Pacific Islander participation.
Yeah, Pacific and Māori, in terms of contracted players. And so even back then in the early 2000s, when they saw that change in demographic, they saw a need. Well, how do we promote and connect with this community, this cohort, this playing group, and what do we do about it? Mm-hmm. And, so I was really, really grateful that the then CEO, Jeff Carr, and academy manager, Martin Meredith, and worked closely with Taz, Baititi, and so those sorts of spaces were a great need. And to look at it now, 15 years down the track, there's still a long way to go.
Yeah.
But the fact that an organization saw the need and did something about it, for me, was a huge step moving forward.
With sport, NRL in particular, how much influence does the game of rugby league have on the Pacific Islands?
Yeah, well, in terms of the National Rugby League or Australian Rugby League more broadly, research, evidence-based learning revealed that Pacific contribution, it matters. Full stop. It matters. And if it matters, what's been done about it, not in a problem-based sense, but in a strength-based approach, right? And this conversation isn't anything new. So perfect example, two watershed moments for me in terms of what that research has revealed that I guess indicate the Pacific contribution or the influence. 1908, cash-strapped New South Wales rugby football league invited all Māori tour, Māori being Polynesian. And so without their help, they came and toured Australia and they toured the eastern states and helped them out. And so there's the first moment. For, foundation year, the influence was felt back then.
Yep.
And moving forward, more recently, for me, a key watershed moment of Pacific contribution was the decision of Jason Tomololo and Andrew Fafita and representing Tonga, which showed particularly, rugby league compared to other, codes, right? A reach globally isn't as strong, but their decision put Pacific on the map in terms of it matters to us. Like, cultural identity isn't just something we wear on our sleeve. It's within. And it'll influence and it'll inform and determine, pathways going forward. So those two key watershed moments, both historically and contemporarily, really help shape, the influence. And so for the last, 10 years, the conversation's been on representation. So, oh, wow, there's a lot of Pacific Islander and Māori athletes coming through. And that's the talk about visibility and representation. That's like in any workplace, right? If you go into if I was a US-based, successful US-based company with a particular product that only we had, and 50% of my workforce were proud Australians, but I'm based in the US, how does that change my managerial approaches, workplace diversity? It's more than just inclusion, it's about innovation. And so it's the same here in Australia. We have a proud, proud product, a service that belongs to the people, and 50% of the employees are of a particular background with certain tendencies, understandings, and influences. How do I unpack that? It's more than just representation. It's about really understanding what works and what it looks like in the future. And hence why there's been this conversation about underrepresentation, 48% in the playing group, and a mere up to 9% in non-playing roles. So that's not to say you better bring it up to 48 for the sake of tokenism. That means, well, what's the game doing in terms of developing pathways, in terms of providing opportunities for Pacific people to be in spaces like this, in media roles, in coaching roles, in executive roles, in sponsorship roles, because we find the research revealed that Pacific people are not limited to merely on the field performances, but off the field productivity. I like that. It's more than just on-field performance. It's about off-field productivity.
Yep.
Those opportunities haven't necessarily come to the fore slowly as compared to 10 years ago. And so, in short, you ask, what does Pacific contribution looks like? Well, that's up to those in not just decision-making roles, but it's up to those on ground level as well, right? We tend to wait for the top-down, whatever the executive decide, and then that's follow. But we're finding now the research is showing that Pacific voices want to be elevated from the bottom. They feel like they're not being heard or validated as much compared to 10, 20 years ago.
Yeah.
But we're finding the voices of young Pacific, whether it be males or females in the game, are now starting to be elevated. So it's no longer just top down, but this bottom up approach now. And it's that middle ground that we navigate. That's key now moving forward, and particularly in the next 10, 20 years.
What do you think is helping drive those voices being heard?
What is helping those voices being heard? It's probably motivated by a couple of different factors. Maybe
to start it, perhaps without trying to sound negative, but some frustrations mm-hmm. in terms of those voices. They're experiencing issues that only Pacific people experience more so. So I know it's player wide, but even more so for a Pacific person, right? Relocation can mean different. It means something different to a Pacific person. Moving from a regional to an urban to a city, moving from the highlands
yep.
through to the city, moving from Fiji to a French rugby league club, moving from South Auckland to the Gold Coast, the relocation can mean something different for a Pacific person. And what we're finding, the research revealed that a lot of individuals and even organizations can blanket cover people. And I had an NRL staffer the other day who'd been working with, has been working with someone for a while, unintentionally, but thought that a person was of a Samoan descent this whole time, Tongan, and that's two very, very, different cultures. But from a non-Pacific or perhaps from an Australian perspective, it's viewed as, oh, you're Islanders, aren't you, or Polynesian, or even confusing a Melanesian player, right? Mm-hmm. Someone from Papua and Fiji and Vanuatu and Solomons can be very, very different to Polynesian cultures.
Yeah.
So those sorts of misunderstandings, maybe misguided unintentionally, mm-hmm. but nevertheless exist. And so relocation issues, cultural understanding, and even then upbringing, right? A Samoan being raised in Campbelltown can be very different to a Samoan being raised in Hurstville, or a Tongan in the Northern Beaches compared to a Tongan in Mount Druitt. And it's very similar even to any team, one could argue. But even highlighted more so from Pacific. I remember me speaking with a Pacific player who felt like they couldn't really connect with this whole, I grew up in the hood, from a certain postcode representing. Says, my parents were quite well to do. I don't know if I felt that struggle compared to the other Islander boys. So I sort of feel like a disconnect. Hearing even a term plastic. You will, right? One can take that as quite offensively, but it's like, oh, you're not a real, Pacific person because you haven't really experienced it. Those sorts of complexities and understandings come into play. But on the flip side, Pacific culture brings, so the research found four key hallmarks or sociocultural distinctive motivations and what they bring to the game. What they bring to any workplace, this is very key for any organization to know. First, the research revealed that family or kinship ties, absolutely key. Mm-hmm. So in a sporting culture where they're trying to develop those family and kinship, they want to build a team culture and create a family type environment. Pacific people, research showed, they are primed for that because they're used to that collectivism growing up. They're used to a lot of siblings or perhaps sharing a room with several siblings and looking after their grandma in the old age, in Pacific sense, it's not common to send someone to an aged care facility. It's the family's responsibility to look after that person. And so this collectivism, this kinship, that's key.
Yep.
Secondly, spirituality. The research found that most sporting organizations or even some individuals, they overlook the importance of spirituality. Of a Pacific athlete, even at schoolboy level now, where many coaches are allowing prayers. And I don't know if 20 years ago on Australian TV, you'd see many prayer circles happening. Yeah. It's very, very common now, right? And you just, almost every game is a handful. And now clubs even making a prayer area on the dressing room what you will. So spirituality is absolutely key. Now, you don't have to be religious or anything. You've just got to understand the role of spirituality. And a perfect example is, when a player agent signs a young Pacific person, let's just say here in Logan or in Ipswich, and they say, I'm coming over at this time and we'll sign some paperwork. And when they head over, don't expect just the player and the parent. Mm-hmm. Expect the whole village to be there and the youth pastor and the youth pastor's friend who's just a fan of that team.
Yeah.
And so don't, expect, 30 people there and expect to be fed.
Yeah.
And that's just the Pacific way.
Yeah.
And so for an agent, for a club, create those extra columns on your Excel spreadsheet of it's not just the emergency contact. Not quite often it's that youth pastor that they've grown up with, that they've looked to, that they trust even more than the coach, unfortunately, sometimes. So there's that, the spirituality. The third one is culture. And there's been some conversations, you know, what can clubs do to help a specific person feel validated? You know, there's, you just got to look, you know, closely, you know, recently, you know, club over country sort of negotiations, or, you know, an NRL club proudly ensures that the flag of a person's, you know, culture is there, you know, visible in the club somewhere. And I believe in the Super League, you know, I think the flag of their ethnicity, if a try score, you know, from the media to show that, you know, the global reach and really acknowledging those ties. We do find a lot of players or athletes now thank the game because they feel the game gives them the opportunity to connect to the culture.
Yeah.
Do you mind if I asked you?
Yes.
I know you were tied in. Culture has it always been a part? Did you find the game gave you opportunities more so to connect or reconnect, or because you grew up there, you found, you know what I mean? You find you meet a lot of PNG lads now, probably grew up here, and asking you, I don't know, how did you find that navigation between, you know, culture and the sporting workplace?
I guess in my early days when I played first grade, that, now that I'm at the Broncos are big on bringing culture and, you know, making an event of, you know, different cultures. There's a cooking night, like traditional food night. Everyone brings their food. Unfortunately, I didn't experience that the Titans early days coming through, but I think they're doing some now that the voices are being heard. So in my early days, I didn't necessarily feel that connection to PNG was strong, especially around, you know, training. We're at the Broncos now, you know, every morning you wake up, you're at training, just before you run out, you're picking up the PNG flag or the Australian flag for myself, going and hanging it up outside, you know, where we train. That's a big moment for, you know, the players there. There's several different flags that are representing different cultures, different countries. So you certainly feel that sense of connection there. And where I think back in 2009, that didn't necessarily exist. And when I think about it now that when we talk about player well-being, that's a huge part of player well-being. You know, that sense of being validated, feeling connected to the playing group, the club. You feel like you're there representing that country amongst those guys at every day at training. And that's a big thing. It may look like a small gesture, but it's huge. You know, when you have Islander or Pacific Islander working there, and I know there's several different cultures, but there's a lot of commonalities, these things will bring out the best in them. And that's what I feel like. And at the Titans, and it's not that my experience was bad there, not at all.
Times are different.
Yeah, I really enjoyed my time there. But feeling connected to PNG, I had a much stronger sense at the Broncos. And, you know, even in my time in France, now that we're talking about you know, those voices being heard out of frustration. I don't know if the Super League did that because of that, but, you know, on your lockers, there's a PNG Australian, there's a small flag of PNG in Australia on my locker, and, you know, you're in France.
It's your reminder.
Yeah, it's a nice reminder every day just to see that, and, you know, you're representing your two countries, and I think that's a huge step in the right direction for the sport. And I guess, you know, with what you're doing with, you know, workplace as well, not just the sporting world, I think it's a huge benefit to, or it will be a huge benefit for the companies and organizations for them to look into.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, likewise, you know, that's why I agreed to be here, because I understand that your voice is important, and what you and your family are doing even more so. And I guess the last one is actually service. So, you know, culturally, we view a playing contract isn't our playing contract. It's the families, it's the communities. It's all those that have gone before you as well. It's the contract is for future generations. And so that places a lot of pressure on young Pacific shoulders and anyone's shoulders at that. So we found with all the interviews that Pacific athletes were driven by that notion of service, that this is about giving. This isn't necessarily just monetizing my career. And that has its complications as well, you know, with financial literacy and financial pressure.
Yep.
You know, the Australian Bureau of Statistics reveal that Pacific communities reside in some of the low socioeconomic postcodes in Australia. And so those pockets of communities, if you will, in those areas, and predominantly in Brisbane, Sydney and Melbourne. And when they come into money, you know, split wages between X amount of families and extended families and in those tensions. And so there's a lot happening, but I'm big on when organizations can frame, you know, managerial processes and practices around family and kinship, spirituality, culture and service, it'll most certainly, evidence-based reveals, most certainly increase productivity or boost productivity, enhance preparedness and optimize performance. And I use those three P's a lot in using organizations to be able to understand the role of those four hallmarks. And an ebook is coming out and all the workshops are based around that for any organization that have Pacific people in their workplace or in their workforce. And using those four key distinctive hallmarks, if you will, are ways to really strengthen trust, provide opportunities of innovative or shared knowledge systems. And that's like any workplace, right? Everyone wants to be validated. Everyone wants to be valued. Everyone has a life outside of the workplace. But if you can bring your, not just your whole self, but your best self to the workplace, then you're only going to improve, you know, that organization, you know, both self and others. And that's what the research reveals. And so I think I actually enjoyed the whole, academic journey. It wasn't about any letters or degrees or anything. It was really about getting those knowledge pieces out, because I experienced it in the workplace myself, being one of the few. I was a sessional academic lecturer for many years at Western Sydney University. And one stage after a lecture, I got confused as the cleaner. The security guard. Oh, yeah, it's after you're done cleaning. I went, sorry, mate, I'm the lecturer. And he goes, oh. Sorry, mate. Like, obviously, you're too young, or you're not used to seeing Pacific people, and stuff like that.
Yeah,
you've got to, you know, using those sorts of experiences drove me to get some. Well, what is, you know, what does the workplace look like, feel like for Pacific people in an Australian context? Yeah. You'll find there's a lot of similarities and intersections with, you know, Indigenous knowledge systems. We're finding now, I get asked a lot in the education sector. What are the intersections with Indigenous, Australian, African, and Pacific now in certain areas of certain demographics in certain areas? So it's an interesting journey, and it's one that we can all, I guess, work together on rather than just a parachute in, so to speak.
Yeah.
The last thing you want is to sign up for a workshop and just tick the box like many organizations do. You want it embedded, integrated. You want it through Tokstori, through Talanoa, right? You want it co-designed and consultated together. So there's buy-in, if you will.
Yeah. In terms of the workforce, outside of sport, what do you think a few problems that, you know, the workplaces are seeing? Because even I've heard that, you know, some partners of sporting teams refuse to change their last names, because if the last name's seen as a Pacific Islander last name, that can be seen as an issue, because workplaces understand that, organisations understand there's probably a fair bit of baggage coming with that certain employee. And it's a big problem, this.
It's a tender issue, right? It's a personal one. But there is stigma. You cannot deny this. There is stigma attached to being a Pacific person in Australia, whether you view it as in a negative light or in a constructive manner. There is stigma. Now, why? Often the Pacific region and its population, they are often characterized by deficit. By that, I mean when people think of the Pacific region, they often think of foreign aid, border security, handout mentality, if you will, migration, mobility, and all those issues that come with that, you know, that are fraught about. And so from a workplace, that stigma can be transferred across into different spaces, whether it means taking on, changing a surname. That's just one example of the hesitation of, or the undervaluing of, or underestimating the value of Pacific and Pacificness, Pacificness rather, in any workplace. It can work the other way around as well, right? I had said, Lakisa, that's not Samoan. There's not many K's in the Samoan language. Like, you know, that's my grandfather's first name. And, you know, then there's chief titles, and there's, oh, so what chief title do you have? And so there's these complexities both within, without, and around Pacific. But that characterization of deficit is actually shifted over the last few decades. But what we're finding is Pacific people can't wait that long. And you probably, a lot of our listeners will probably thinking, well, that's no different to perhaps the Indigenous Australian space or to any minority group, right? There's this paradigm shifts of understanding. And so for me, it's about the Pacific people and non-Pacific people now understanding the past. Perfect example. The first performance on fields in Australia by Pacific Islanders was not on the sporting field. It was blackbirding. It was indentured labourers, slavery or kidnapping, if you will, on the sugarcane farms here in Queensland. Oh, how times have shifted. Oh, how times have changed now, performing on a different type of field, to receiving accolades, to receiving place in society, if you will. So it's more than just names, right? We're talking about legacy and generations. So my organization and any other organization that's interested, I'm about putting things in place now for the future. So for example, my young children are proud, well, our children are proud Australian, where they grew up, spent a bit of time in France, or with this, they're grown up in Sydney and now moved to Brisbane. I want them to be able to navigate both, you know, the workplace, but also be proud Australian and proud Samoan, and to understand their legacy. And so they're fortunate enough to have all four grandparents around now. So every Monday night we gather together as a family and ensure that my children are around their grandparents so they can learn, you know, Pacific culture and talk story and talanoa, so they can, through their oratory culture, and so that they can take that to inform their future, so they don't necessarily feel that stigma or that characterization or that deficit, if you will, moving forward. And how was I motivated by that? And well, I've been often my entire professional career, I've always been the one, if not only, Pacific person in either the staff room or the workplace. And there was stigma attached to that too. But you navigate that. Often I'm a big fan of, often it's not even a cultural issue. A humanistic issue. Mm-hmm. You just treat people with respect and value them, yep, because everyone's lived experiences are different. So I speaking with a CEO recently and said he came across very acculturated, very respectful of Pacific culture. I said, how did you learn that? A lot of other people that I meet in terms of clients are thinking, okay, so when I view Pacific culture, it's like this, you know, again, that stigma attached. And this person was very, very different. I said, where did you get that from? He goes, oh, I grew up around Indigenous communities when I was young, the Northern Territory. That's not to say everyone has to have that lived experience, but he took those lessons. You can still learn those in a, you know, in an urban region, right? And learn it from parents or families. But the point being is that they've taken those lifelong lessons and applied it into their workplace and their lifelong journey, learning journey. And I think that's the same with all of us. And that's what excites me.
Yeah.
Because I certainly don't want to come across, here's the Pacific solution and it's going to solve everything. It's more about, well, what do you bring? Because every client, every dynamic is different, and every place is different. So just because something works here, let's say at the Broncos or at a junior league club, may not necessarily mean it's going to work in another setting.
Yeah. So I just want to shift perspective just for a little bit. If one of your boys going to get a job, right? If you're speaking to the boss, how to bring out the best in him in the workplace, what are the key topics or things you're going to speak to the boss about? I know we covered a lot of those four key elements.
So I'm speaking with a decision maker to give him advice on how to get the best out of a person.
Yes.
Obviously, we'd start with those four hallmarks because they're evidence-based. That's research. Often people just sort of shot from the hip in terms of, well, this was my experience. But they needed to anchor themselves or litmus test, if you will, against those four. And they're only recent. So I would obviously start with those four. But me personally, I would actually spend time not talking about the specific person. I'd spend time talking about that manager or that executive and better understand their lived experience, what's brought them to their particular point in their journey. And you'll find there's quite a lot of similarities with that specific person. For example, if I'm teaching, so there's a lot of, Australian government now have engaged the Pacific with workforce skill shortages and bring them over through like seasonal workers and different types of industries to fill that skill shortage. And so I know a lot of them would struggle with understanding the Australian workplace laws, workplace, particularly workplace health and safety. And so I would start with things that they, commonalities. So for a Pacific person who've put down, an earth oven, an umu, or hangi, and what are the processes or procedures needed for that, or the procedures in preparing for a huge church event in the islands or a huge celebration, and discuss things that can go wrong and the costs and the risk management, the reputational risk and all the things that come with it, and then translate it over to the Australian context of workplace health and safety. They're a lot, it's easier for them to understand, right? Oh, yeah, I've experienced that. Oh, is that what you call it? Oh, well, we approach it like this. And so if I was speaking to an executive who is hiring a Pacific person, A, I'd understand their experiences. Then I'd learn about what that Pacific person, their experiences, and just align the similarities and highlight the differences or the gaps, and then fill in the gaps. Perfect example, identify and verify their cultural background. That's tip number one. There's nothing. And if they're, let's say, a Māori person coming over, recruiting, we were speaking with some before, and organize what's called a pōwhiri or a welcome, a formal welcome for that player or that person. They were like, oh, I don't know how to do that. Well, that's why we step in, tell them a consultancy to help them. So you create a safe environment or a welcoming party. And so what happens is that for that young Pacific and Māori person that comes into the workplace, they come into a culturally safe workplace. And where there's cultural safety, there's trust, there's productivity, there's performance. And that's how you get the best out of them. You don't just understand the worker. You understand the entire Pacific entourage. That's a term I've coined in the PhD. Once you understand their Pacific entourage, you haven't just understood the individual. You've understood all the spheres of influence that have brought that person to where they are now. And so can you imagine that Pacific person that's coming to, let's say, or Māori that's coming in the workplaces, organize the pōwhiri? And it's quite, a lot of organizations, they hesitate or they're not necessarily confident in trying new things because they're unsure, they're uncertain. They've never done this before. It's a new space. And so they deter away from things that they're not used to. And so that's where we step in. We fill in that knowledge gap for them, but we do it with them. Can you imagine that Pacific and Māori person that comes into the workplace? Let's say a club recruits that person. That club organizes a pōwhiri, a proper welcome. What do you think that young person or that athlete is going to say to their family, to the cousins at the next huge gathering, because it's a collectivist?
Yeah.
Do you think the family's going to say, I saw that on Insta, or I saw this? Like, it's not about the conversation that the employee-employer have. So another tip, the employee needs to think about what conversations they have with that person's family. And often they say, yeah, we're already doing that, but in a culturally safe manner. I'm talking about Piccaninny, I'm talking about, you know, aunties, uncles, often in a family, sometimes it's not even the father. It's the father's oldest brother who's probably the voice, authority figure in that,
yeah,
in that large family. And so you ensure that uncle's involved in communications. And so something simple, as you were talking about before, you know, validating, you know, whether it's touching or grabbing the flag, again, it's making sure it's culturally safe. And so in some onboarding, HR and onboarding is absolutely key. I'm finding quite often that they think it's just a coaching issue. In fact, it's a commercial issue. It's the media team issue. It's an executive issue. It's the community team issue. It's front office issue. Make sense, and it's a coaching, and so you'll find that the Pacific contribution actually bleeds right through all areas of the organization.
Yeah, I asked that question because, like, for my cousins in particular, you know, especially in PNG, I was thinking about them. A lot of them are let go from work, whether it's their attitude or not turning up on time consistently over a long period of time. You know, there's obviously frustration. There's a whole lot heap of stuff going on there of why they're not turning up. Family problems. I guess for a lot of companies in PNG, that's the frustration that I've found. And say my brother or sister, cousin, they are scared to go to work sometimes because, you know, they've been late before and they end up getting fired. I put that responsibility on the individual not turning up to, you know, work. But there's also ways that individual can be helped.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we're talking about island time. It's a thing, right?
Yeah.
Island time. Now, when I go back to PNG, for me, it's, you know, outside of playing the game, it's holiday time. It's relaxing time. I click into gear real quick over there in island time, you know, and I enjoy that part. But there's also a job that you have to get to 9 to 5, and you have to get there early and make sure that you.
So how did you learn how to switch hats? They call it navigating two worlds. So when you're there, you're all in.
Yeah.
When you're here, you're all in. How did you learn that?
In under 19s, when I was driving from Lismore to Tweed Heads, I was late. I didn't ring my coach to tell him. And he said, don't bother putting your boots on, you're not playing. And I knew my whole family was coming from Lismore in an hour and 20-minute drive. And that, I felt embarrassed in front of the team. It didn't feel good. But from that moment onwards, I've just always hated being late for training or games. So that clicked me into gear real quick. But that's me as that's me as an individual. I know not many people would take that well and just say, oh, get stuff, I'm not come back here.
Well, there's a key lesson right there. You've learnt from a unpleasant experience, right? Yep. And you use that as motivation later. And so to answer your question, what can employers do? Where's that line? So for me personally, I would encourage that employer to have those conversations early, but role play them early. The amount of 16-year-old players I've had to role play, pretend I'm the head coach or the team manager, and, you know, not even a text message or they said, oh, but I tried on Messenger. I went, but are you connected to them on Messenger? No, but so how are they going to see that message? So, and I would, from like two ways. So if I was an employer, I'd role play with them earlier on. So have that conversation early so they're aware, very clear of the consequences rather than just making it on the spot. And so that way there's transparency. From a and role play with that employee, and let them know, you know, our values and our standards. And like you said, island timing, whether it's sunrise, sun up, like,
yeah,
and stuff. It was great to hear your experience of how do you navigate that space. And I have had to navigate those tensions as well, especially when working with other Pacific people. They think you probably expect a little bit more leeway from you. It's like, oh, you're a Pacific manager, so you get me. Like, yeah, I can get away with this. You know what I mean? And that's when you go, brother, like,
yeah.
So those tough conversations need to be had, but I found rather than waiting for those tough conversations to happen, to snowball and happen, I have the tough conversations early, and even practice having those hard conversations with them and helping them feel that it's not about awkwardness, it's about transparency and trust. And it's the same in any family setting, right? Yeah. If you can have those, you know, those relationships where you know you've been holding on to something for years, and all it took was just, I wish I had that hard conversation earlier on, it would have saved me a lot of trouble. So it's something simple, but it's, you know, having those clear guidelines, because, you know, I mean, when they do the three strikes, you're out sort of thing, there's, you know, there's only so many warnings, but they've just got to understand big picture. I found an employee says, it's actually not about lateness. Do you know what happens from my perspective when it's late in productivity? Do you know what happens if you come in half day and then I've got to call someone to fill in that gap? You know how much it costs us? And then you know what it looks like at end user when it gets to the consumer? So your 3 hours late has cost us X amount of dollars. So it's not necessarily you're bad. It's here's big picture. And I find a lot of our people just like, oh, good. Yeah. Don't worry, uncle.
Yeah.
Well, hey, I'm not your uncle. I'm your boss. And she's not your auntie. She's the payroll officer. Yeah. And so, you know what I mean? It's because of that mentality. So it's both ways. And then as an employer, for them to accept those hard conversations, you know, are you creating that collective? I know a owner of a Pacific, a small business who's of Pacific descent. He says, most of his staff are non-Pacific. I said, what management style do you use? And he goes, it's everything I grew up with. If it's their birthday, it's important to their family, them and their family. So if I give them an extra birthday, they leave. We have lunch every Friday. I make sure I put on a decent spread for them. And you know, if a lunch costs a couple of $100, you know, like the point being, that's my investment to them because it's important. So little things like that, probably nothing new. But really, I find using a Pacific lens, I find with a lot of Pacific people is that they leverage a lot off their lived experience. And I'll ask them, where's your formal training? And I said, I just thought about what we did at church or at or in the family, and I apply it in the workplace. And I find when a coach says, they're talking about their leadership team, I said, I'm thinking of this kid. I'm like, oh, yeah, how come? And they're too quiet. Oh, did you know that they've actually been a youth group leader for the last 5 years? You know, they're 17. And at 12 years old, yeah, they've always been involved. Really? You never told me that. It just shows you need to know what they're doing, they're experiencing outside, and then speak to the youth pastor or someone about, hey, what's this person's leadership like, rather than you just seeing it during preseason or what other people feel.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, in short, employee being transparent, having those hard conversations early and being very, very clear and role-playing with them, and from an employee perspective, who many in this day and age have a sense of entitlement, right? And that laissez-faire approach in terms of the Pacific. But when you're on your own, and if you can navigate, if you can understand both vantage points, it's easier to navigate both worlds, is what I'm trying to say. And that's not to say, oh, you're doing it, without trying to sound harsh, a white way or a black way or a Pacific or a non-Pacific or a, you know, it's not attaching color or anything to it. It's attaching cultural safety and cultural understanding. Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely. Okay, Dave, we'll, to finish off, we'll talk about how people can find you. But before that, we'll get into the rapid fire questions. Just a few fun things. Answer them as short as you like, as long as you like. Have you ever been late for work?
Capital A, absolutely.
What type of music do you enjoy?
R&B and reggae, you know, the island jams.
What's your favorite island dish?
Kalu and sapasui, not sapasui and laisa and rice. Yeah.
What's that?
Taro.
Taro and
kalu and chop suey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With a bit of coconut in there as well.
With the taro, yeah.
Yeah.
All the unhealthy island stuff.
I think actually I'm having some delivered to me tonight by one of my PNG friends. They're having a barbecue here. I can't attend to it. I've got to go to the Gold Coast, but when I come back, he said he'll bring some. So I'm looking forward to that.
That's so a meaty thing. Mate, yeah. Come have a barbie. Just, I won't be, I have it here. I got you, man. But just make sure the food's ready when I'm back, man.
I'm looking forward to it. Is there a saying or a quote that you live by or you think about often?
Yeah, be your best self. It's from Gordon B. Hinckley, it's a church leader. Just be your best self. You know, similar to being the best version of yourself, because you're so unique. Yeah, you know, there's only one you. And,
If there's an animal that best describes David Lakisa, what would that animal be?
You've probably had some crazy ass animals said on this podcast before. I might just say something that's hopefully never been said before. Not for the sake of. An animal, koala.
Koala.
Yeah, you know.
No one said that before.
He's so cute. No. Yeah. You just never know.
Yeah, no one said it. Actually, Paulie Aethon had a good story about a koala. Yeah.
What? Actually, I saw that one.
Yeah.
Wait. You just used that as the excerpt, right?
Yeah.
Now I'm trying to remember his punchline. What happened? It didn't attack him. He
attacked his dad.
His dad.
His dad walked back in with a cut up shirt and blood everywhere. That was a great story. I love that one. What purchase have you made in the last 6 months with $100 or less that has greatly improved your life?
One of these ring lights. Yeah. Actually, they're really cool, eh?
Yeah.
Bring out the best in your skin complexion, meaty.
Yeah,
No, it just helps with all the meetings because I noticed the lighting. Lighting's important in meetings, and some meetings was like.
Yeah, I think that's a great answer for myself to use. Actually, I'll ask this again. I think you've kind of answered it. If you could put a message on a billboard for you to see on your way to work every morning, what would it say?
Ooh. Love you, family.
I like that one.
I'll use it more of a letter, you know, as an attachment. Just think of, understand my why, to get through anyhow. I see that on the billboard.
I like that one. Is there a charity that you support that listeners or viewers could help support?
A charity that I support. I actually do a lot of work. I have a volunteer role in the church, in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and there's a huge charity arm to that. That helps out with a lot of humanitarian efforts, so I contribute a lot to that. But, really, for any sort of community organization, just get involved in the community.
Yeah, like
Sons Footy Club and stuff. It's just about just getting involved for me.
Yeah. How can people best find you? I know you've got a website up, talanoaconsultancy.com.au. That's the best way for people to reach out to you to do any type of work with you.
Absolutely. Just email me directly at david@talanoaconsultancy.com.au. I'm more than happy to connect and chat.
Dave, I've certainly learned a lot today. You've opened my mind up to a whole new world. I didn't know how to ask my questions based off what you were saying, but, you know, that's a good challenge for me. I see that as a learning experience. I'll certainly watch this clip over and over again so I can get a better understanding of, you know, for myself as well, how to, you know, better deal with my Pacific Islander teammates and, you know, family around me. I think it's such an important part of my life where it's kind of been pushed aside a lot of the time because I get in the, you know, daily grind of training hard, getting home, playing with the kids. But I think, you know, putting a bit more attention in that, I think will certainly be of benefit, not just to myself, but, you know, my family as well. So I appreciate you coming on here and sharing that great knowledge with myself and all the listeners and viewers.
of Te Tere Lava. Thank you, Tru. You and Jason and the team are doing a wonderful job, Miri, so keep up the great work.
Thank you.
If you've enjoyed this episode, then I'd love if you would hit that subscribe button, leave a comment or a review, and share it with anyone you think might enjoy it as well. For more behind-the-scenes content, head to my Instagram at davidmead411 and feel free to slide into my DMs if there's anyone you would love to hear from. I can't wait to bring you another episode next week, and thanks for listening to the David Mead Podcast.